What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Kickback FC. Appreciate you guys tuning into our YouTube channel. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Kickback FC. My name is Salam. I am your co-host today. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host today, Muhammad. My brother, how you feeling again?
I'm doing great.
Very good, man. Muhammad and I are here to talk more about the WAFCON. We got a lot of good feedback and, good insight from our last episode. So I wanted to continue following the tournament as we head into the semifinals and the finals. But yeah, man, before we get started, Muhammad, do you have a good weekend?
Yeah, man. I have family visiting from Toronto, so I've been showing them Boston and kind of, you know, long days walking around. Feeling a bit touristy in the city, which is always fun, honestly. Gives you new perspectives and ways of looking at the city you live in. It's always dope to have family, so being around. So that's I've been enjoying it thoroughly.
Absolutely, bro. It's good, man. Like we were talking about before, just a chill weekend here at home, man. I didn't do a whole too lot, just kind of doing some work around the house. Had a lot of time to watch the games. But yeah, man, let's get into it. I feel like there's only one place where we can start based off of how the games went.
Yeah,
man, Nigeria versus Zambia. So, you know, going into this matchup, we said that it was a clash of two styles. It was probably, you know, on paper, you know, everything that we had seen up until that point, the best offense versus the best defense in the tournament. Defensively speaking, I think Nigeria held up their end of the bargain. Didn't concede a goal. They kept the shutout, and they're 5-0 win versus Zambia. But let's talk, bro. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we said obviously we didn't know what version of Nigeria we were going to get. We didn't. You know, we both shared the same sentiment as, you know, we felt like this team could have showed a little bit more from what they had shown so far in the group stage up until that point. But they came out and, you know, they showed why they're the, you know, dominant powerhouse of, you know, of the AFCON on the women's side. So just your thoughts on the game, man.
Yeah, I think the game, when I saw the lineup, I think when I saw the Nigerian lineup, that's where it already started for me. Like, alarm bells went off. I was like, oh, wait, they tactically adapted something. But I did not know yet what the plan was. Because Justin Madugu, the coach of Nigeria, basically added in who I already thought should have been playing, Jennifer Echigini, who plays for PSG in France. So she got brought into the squad. So for me, that was already like, oh, you're actually bringing in someone that I already expected you to be having in the squad all along. So that was the first one. And the second one was bringing in Toronto FC's Esther Okoronkwo, who I always found like a very interesting profile. But for some reason, I feel like she's been here and there, like a lot of different clubs. And I don't feel like she's settled in yet in her club career. But so when I saw those two starting, I was like, huh, interesting. Why did we make those choices? And tactically, when the game started, there was a clear element. I think Nigeria was a bit surprised by Zambia's tactical plan, which was try and press high, which I felt was not the thing to do given how stable Nigeria is in the back. I thought that was already like, ooh, please don't do that, because now you're not gonna have the space to counter Nigeria, which like, I praise Zambia of being a team that has the effect on others to create this sense of chaos in games. like we've seen it in like the World Cup, Olympics, where they can literally create this chaos that then allows for them to go in this you attack, we attack, you counter, we counter type of games.
Yeah.
But like we were saying previously, and as I was trying to do this cross-team comparison between Nigeria and Italy, I feel like Nigeria has been playing like this very Italy-like tournament where in the group stage it was just like, let's focus on defensive solidity and stability. And then once the quarters come in, kick into this second gear that they know they can get into, but they don't really, they didn't show us this. So I think we were all being like, okay, are we going to get the same version in the group stage or is there another gear? And they clearly had one or two more gears. So the game plan from like a Nigerian perspective was very clear. They added players with a bit more height because Nigerians are just taller than Zambians. So it's like, okay, we're going to use our height to our advantage. We're going to work with a lot of, we're going to play through the wings and look for crosses into the box. We're going to try and cross early from the sides or we get to the byline and bring it in, which caused a lot of issues. Like basically all the goals from Nigeria came for either a cross or a free kick or a corner, something that basically the ball is up in the air. We're winning either the first or the second ball, and then we find the back of the net. And I think that was the perfect game plan for them. And I think Zambia just approached the game, unfortunately, wrong from like just a setup. And I don't want to like diminish anything of like Nigeria's dominance, but I do think the tactical approach here was just wrong. Because Zambia basically took away its own superpower, which is the speed and counter.
Yeah.
And then I think Nigeria just exposed all of Zambia's issues, which is they cannot build out from the back. They don't really have a good or solid goalkeeper. I think someone like Bilemu, who plays right back, is actually a pretty good right back. But if she's not able to connect with the midfield, she's not able to connect with the wingers. Now she's going long every time. And then there's like this huge height difference between the Nigerian midfield and back line. So you get like this weird game. Every time Zambia went straight, Nigeria knew what was coming. And they just took the ball, brought it down. And then, oh my goodness. Ajibade, what a freaking bro. I had so many moments in that game where I was like,
yeah,
I couldn't help myself because the way she was getting out of tricky situations, controlling the ball in tight spaces, looking for the combinations, or really just dribbling past to like ease up the pressure and looking, going into those gaps. But the same for like Esther Okoronkwo, who I was like, yeah, if a WNSL team is watching this, please go get her because she fits everything I believe you want in a striker. She was playing with her back to the goal whenever ball was coming long or to her feet. And then, but the same thing, like whenever there was space in midfield, she would drop in into pockets, receive it, turn, and then launch. That's basically how the first goal happened. She comes into space, get the ball, launches it up, boom, goal. So I believe tactically Zambia was just not set up well. I think they were set up to press. And then as a player, once you start feeling you're running, but you're not getting to places on time, you're always late, you're arriving second to everything, you start doubting when to press, when not to press. And that's when gaps start coming in between the defensive and midfield, the midfield and the attacking line. And then I believe, Kunda Nanji, Banda were completely shut down. And props to Michel Alozie, who really troubled Kundananji. I, in my head, I was thinking, coach, get Rachel Kundananji to switch wings because she's not getting by Alozie today.
Yeah.
Leave that to someone else to try, or even just play a 4-4-2 with two banks of four. And once you were 3-0 down, I was like, just drop because you're not getting through this. Anyways, yeah, there's so much to say, but I think at the heart of it was that Nigeria, I believe, and reading in media and like interviews later on, a lot of Nigerian players felt like disrespected that of things that were previously said in the press by the Zambian coach and maybe some Zambian players about Zambia being like, we're not afraid of Nigeria. We really want to play our game and take it to them. And I think Nigerians saw that as a disrespect, and then they locked in, and it was a hell of a smacking.
Yeah, no, I mean, all great points, bro. Like you said, I mean, we didn't really know what to expect from this Nigerian team. And, I mean, they surprised everybody. I think, like you said, I think tactically Nigeria got it right. And I think that you could tell, like, I mean, from the first goal, obviously the header, great finish. You could clearly see that there was like a height difference, a big height difference between between the two teams, especially in certain positions. But I mean, Esther Okoronkwo, man, I mean, even great touch on the second goal, you know, like great touch to
bring it down.
The third goal, I mean, was an unlucky bounce, but like to your point, I mean, like when you look at most of the, at least for the first three goals, they came from crosses into the box, the ball being up in the air, Nigeria just causing problems when the ball's in a, what they call it, like a neutral place, right? When the, when the ball's up in the air, them causing problems. A goal and a two assists for her, man. I mean, talk about impact. So you got to give them credit. And definitely, I mean, I think you talk about a target forward in the NWSL, man. Like, she can kind of do it all. She can play as a target. Like you said, if she needs to drop in and combine, she can do that as well too. But, I mean, just overall great game. I guess I know we talked about, like, I mean – Banda and Kundananji, I mean, I felt like, not to their fault, I think Nigeria did a great job of game planning, you know, around those two, and as you probably should. But I guess, like, what would be something that you would have changed from the Zambians' perspective? Because I mean, I get it. Going into it, obviously, you know, there's the talk, the chatter that's been going on. Nigeria's felt disrespected. And I mean, to Zambia's credit, I mean, I felt like they deserve to be feeling the way that they were feeling going into this game, based on, you know, their performances, how they've been playing. So I guess from the Zambian perspective, like, what would you have changed?
I think, like, I fully believe that Zambia needs to focus on three things. Create a structure in your nation where the women's game is respected a bit more, where focus on your goalkeeping development, focus on center backs developing center backs that can play from the back, and focus on like midfielders who can drop in and basically control the pace of the game, because that's literally what they lack to be contenders at the Olympics and stages like that. Because other than that, in most of the other positions, I feel like they would be fine. Like, you can, you know, but I feel, but in this game, I think after that 1-0, I would have, as a coach, I would have probably just told my players to, let's get to the half.
Right.
No more than one goal down. Like, close shop, fall back. Clearly, the tactical approach they're using is not working. Is working really well against us. They figured us out. Like, they figured us out, drop back. They should have had a plan B and a plan C. And I felt like there was not a plan B or plan C. There was just one plan. And that was trying to get the ball to Banda and Kunananji as soon as possible. And they also should have paid attention to how South Africa played them in the Three Nations Challenge a month before AFCON. And Desiree Ellis, South Africa's coach, already said it then. This is how we played y'all. And this is how we figured you out. And Nigeria basically took that same thing, which is cut out space for Banda and Kunananji to run into, press the back line so they rush their passing, and Banda and Kunananji not getting the ball means no one else can really force anything. Now it's even. So if I were the coach in that moment, I would have literally just, like I said, two banks of four and then two strikers who are basically sitting on that center mid, like center box, like just chill there. Don't press, don't exhort energy. Just close the space, frustrate Nigeria on the wings, force them to like look for something else than crossing or. So I think that would have been my approach. Like, because in the half, maybe then you could have been able to change things if it's just 1-0, but don't go to the second half already 3-0 down. It just, game's over.
Yeah.
So I think, that would have been the switch I think they should have made. But obviously I want to say it's easier to speak in retrospect, but even then I'm like, at that level, you should have a plan B. At that level, you should have a plan B. Like, what if what we want to do doesn't work and we get smacked in the face? Switch it up. It's not working. Yeah. Let's fall back to this. And I feel like there was no plan B. And funny enough, the team that she left Ghana to coach Zambia is now in the semis.
Yeah, that's how it goes, bro. That's how it goes, man. But no, man, great tournament by Zambia, definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can't. It's tough, man, especially like when you see not just them, but I mean, we're talking about them now. So it's like when you see how what it took to get here and just kind of like how they've been playing and to kind of go out in the fashion that you did, it's a little bittersweet. It's tough. But next matchup, man, Morocco cruise past Mali to reach the semifinals. I mean, I don't know, bro. I think, you know, we talked about this in our quarterfinal preview. Mm-hmm. I mean, Morocco looks like one of the best teams in the tournament, if not the best team. Mm-hmm. They're at home too, so it's hard. It's already kind of hard to play them in general, but the fact that they have the home crowd behind them, I mean, it's hard to kind of root against them. But yeah, I mean, cruise past Mali. What were your thoughts?
I think, like we predicted, kind of was going to be like, you know, you're playing home.
Yeah,
Morocco doesn't have to travel for the rest of the tournament. They're just staying in Rabat, which is perfect. All the other teams are going to have to travel at some point.
Yeah.
But they're just in Rabat. So meaning no travel time, nothing. You can just stay in the same route and not need to like pack up and leave and come back.
Right.
Every Morocco game is going to be a sold out crowd. And Morocco is a crazy, crazy football nation. So I think game wise, it was a pretty straightforward game. Ibtissam Djeredi coming alive when the team needed her the most. I felt like Ghislain Chebec had her worst game in the tournament so far.
Yeah.
And it's telling that they still won without her having a good game.
Right.
So, which tells me if one of us is not having a good day, someone else will stand up, which a team like Zambia, for instance, doesn't have. If Banda and Kunananji are not having a good game, the whole team is not having a good game. So I think that's the difference when we're, like we were saying previously, around like a complete team that has a deep bench. You see that with Nigeria, you see that with Morocco. I think they're the two teams with the most complete squad. Like, they can go to their bench and not really lose a lot of quality. All the other teams lose a lot of quality whenever they go to their bench. And then I just want to highlight one player, and that is Sekena Diki Uzrawi. I kind of spoke about her a bit in the previous, but I think, like, all the things that happened and went well for Morocco happened because of her and Benzina in the back. She's just like a winger that has it all. Obviously she got that assist, which I don't know what the Malian goalkeeper was doing here, but let's not get into that. She was way off her line. But it was everything leading up to the goal. Like, so she's first, you can see her holding her line, Sakina holding her line, Shebeck getting the ball, turning out of space to play that ball. And then once she gets it, she's well aware where the goalkeeper is, and she's well aware where her striker is. And it's a one ball through the middle, puts it in a platter in front of the goal. Like, here you go, Ibtissam, you do your thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like Morocco just once again underlined why they are a favorite for this tournament. So honestly, not a lot happened in this game that was surprising. Everything kind of went as predicted.
Right.
I think the funny thing though was when this game was happening, you were having the women's Europeans obviously also going on. Yeah, like the penalty shootouts there.
France, Germany.
Yeah, and the Sweden England shootouts where people were missing penalties left.
Oh yeah, Sweden, Germany, yeah.
England. Yeah, and France, Germany, yeah, also the later. But yeah, it's like that funny thing where during the WAFCON, in this game between Morocco and Senegal, two amazing penalties, like Ibtissam Djerayli's penalty. I'm like, even if the goalkeeper went the right way, you're not getting there.
Yeah.
And then Boston Legacy FC's Aissata Traoré obviously getting the consolidation goal for Mali, also on a PK that she placed very well. And I was paying attention to her as well, obviously, as someone who's going to come into WNSL. There was this moment where she did a step over into an acceleration.
Mm-hmm.
It's moments like that. The little finesse. It's like, get the ball, freeze your defender, fake the inside touch, but then step over, boom. And you're like, okay. You get it. Like, there's this thing in a better squad,
you're gonna
have so much more space to exploit those talents. And honestly, Mali had a great tournament in terms of, like, I think this was always going to be their, like, goal, is to get to the quarters. So they achieved their goal, had a good tournament. They can go home proud about everything they've done so far. And it's definitely not a shame losing to the host nation.
Like you said, I echo that 100%. Another team that's had a great tournament, but I mean, it was unlucky that they had to get drawn against Morocco. But just quickly, Sweden versus England. Just like, what were your thoughts on that real quick?
It was a great game. Like, obviously there's been a lot of post-game issues with, like, online, the standard British racism whenever they crash out of the tournament.
Right.
They find a black player to blame and then just racially abuse them, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think specifically Jess Carter has been, who plays for Gotham FC here in New York, has been getting the brunt of it. And I, the league and her team and the players union have all come out with straight statements. Once again, just being like, yo, racism has no space in the game. But unfortunately, I think that is just, if things are in society, they're not going to, you know, magically disappear from the game that's part of society. But in terms of game, it was an amazing game for all the good reasons. Obviously, Sweden, after 26 minutes, were 2-0 up. And yeah. I was like, yo, are they about to run riot on England? And then I think England just has a very interesting squad where they can go to the bench and bring out people that can create. Chloe Kelly, obviously, and then Michelle Eigenmeier, 19 years, getting on the field, scoring that. What a goal, what an equalizer, what a moment.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I really, really enjoyed the game. I felt bad for Sweden, especially during the penalty kicks. And I think Jennifer Falk, the Swedish goalkeeper, if I was her, oh my goodness, I would be so pissed.
Yeah.
I saved 4 penalties and y'all could not finish the game.
Yeah.
I gave y'all 4 chances.
Yeah.
To win the game for us.
What more could you ask?
So I think, and then once she missed her penalty, I was like, yeah, it's over. England is mentally, that's just the moment.
Right.
So no, it was a good game. I think England is becoming a tournament team. Right. I believe in the past, the Lionesses went to tournaments, and you know, it was fun to be there. Right. And I think now they've, like, obviously Serena Wiegmann. Yeah, why am I even pronouncing that as if I don't speak Dutch? Like, I really pronounce that like in English, but it's like Serena Wiegmann. Her obviously tactical astuteness has been shown time and time again, but she also has the quality, unlike the Zambian coach, for instance, where you're down 2-0, you look in your squad, you're like looking at the bench, you're thinking, I'm really gonna take out this player. But yeah, for instance, Serena can take out Hemp, Toon.
Yeah.
Bring in and Stanway, who was having a great tournament but not a good game. And you bring in Beth Mead, Agiman, Chloe Kelly.
Yeah.
You've changed the game. But these are all quality players coming in. So I just think it goes to tell you, for a team to be successful in tournaments, you need a squad of not 11 good players, but, you know, like 15 to 17 good players. And then players you can bring along because, you know, they provide vibes. They're great to have in the dressing room. They will not complain because they're not playing. They're just really there to support and create a team atmosphere.
Yeah.
But I believe, like, a team like Zambia, if, and once again, and I'm going to Zambia because I feel like they have 2 world stars, global superstars. If you would put those 2 in any other team on the quality of an England and whatnot, they will be winning World Cups and whatever tournament, Olympic Games and Olympics and all these big tournaments. And I think that's the difference between investment, talent development, and just those resources that allow for structure and development to happen over time. And as we were just speaking about Morocco, they dropped 30 million in 6 years. Yeah. And you see the result directly.
Yeah.
So I think the Euros has also really been fun to watch. And I think obviously in that now you have England, who then end up progressing. You have Italy, who I want to say surprised us, but Norway is such a terrible tournament team. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And then I think Switzerland really gave Spain a hard time. I'm not going to lie. They really pushed them until that red card and all the happenings. It was not an easy game. And obviously, Spain missing 2 penalties as well. I'm like, the Euros is really... What was it, like 52% of all the PKs in the Euros have been missed?
Have been missed, yeah.
Things like that.
Shout out
the and King. Then that Germany-France game was like one of the wildest games ever.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree. I just wanted to kind of get your perspective, obviously. I don't want to take it away from the WAFCON and, you know, like what we've been talking about, what we've been covering, but the Euros hasn't disappointed as well, too. So definitely going to be interesting to see how that concludes as well, too. But Algeria versus Ghana, man. Yeah, what a game. I mean, it got down to penalties. Well, both games on this side, both got penalties. But, you know, I think in the semifinal preview, you had said something that really kind of stuck with me. And I was thinking about as we were, as I was watching the game, but how emotional it is for a lot of these Algerian players with it being their first, you know, experience, just kind of being here. I think sometimes as fans, people forget that as people who just watch the game that, you know, there's a lot of emotion that goes into these moments representing your country, being there for the first time, not really having anything to kind of go off of in terms of past experience. But sometimes I also feel like that may, you know, benefit some teams because you kind of go into a situation like we don't really have anything to lose. But kind of talk to me about that, bro. Obviously, it got down to penalties, but just the game and I guess how the game ended.
Yeah, I think a few things were just solidified once again. One, Algeria, for me, has the best defense of this tournament.
Right.
They did not concede the entire tournament.
Yeah.
They scored one goal. But they don't concede. And so this the center like basically that defensive line is so good, especially the two center backs in Captain Sofia Guletti and then Kazami.
Right.
I saw some tackles, bro. There were sequences where I think like Ghanaian players thought they were true. And then you'll see just like this sliding tackle on the side, on the ball, but like pure on the ball. As a coach, you're just like,
that's what I'm saying. Mad.
So, and I think Algeria just like played with such intensity. And it was actually funny. Me and my cousin Amina were watching the game. And there was this player who was damn near getting into fights every minute of the game. Ubaman. I think the amount of time she nearly got into fights was amazing. I was like, calm down. But that's everywhere. When you know like the moment is like really getting to you because you're so in it. But there's so many players on this Algerian squad that I'm like, I would want to shout them out. But the player that I really, really, really enjoyed watching is Guita Kafshouni, who the commentators on Bein Sports were butchering her name. It was not even funny. They were like saying whatever came out of their mouths. But you know how easy Zidane made the game look? Like every ball came to him, it was looked like it's so easy. The game is so smooth. Certainly, she has that quality. Yeah. And whenever Algeria was in problem, they just gave her the ball. She slowed it down. She was connecting. She was dialing. She was receiving. Pressure, no pressure. Turning away, looking for the wingers, driving. Gliding past tackles. It was so amazing. Like there was a moment in the game, especially in that second half when Algeria was really struggling, and she just rose to the occasion. Like, give me the ball, I'll get us out of this trouble. Oh, you're stuck as a right back, you don't know where to put, let me come collect the ball from you. Give me the ball. And as I watched her do what she was doing, I was just in awe. Like, even though Ghana was, like, clearly dominating most of the game, But something about her just made her stand out. Like, there was, yeah, like, it's players like that, I believe, you go to a stadium, they don't score goals, but if you just pay attention to how they move, you learn so much about the game, because they make the game look so easy. Like, it's not about being fast or strong. It's just literally, it's all in your head. It's like, if I'm in space all the time, I have time to dictate the next two plays. And it's so amazing. It was so amazing to watch. Yeah. But obviously, the game went to penalties. And I believe that Algeria, who had in the group stage the best goalkeeper in Ngazi, they were like, hey, we can bank on PKs. We have the best goalkeeper of the tournament.
Yeah,
I just don't think they saw Ghana's goalkeeper, Cynthia Conlan. I don't think they knew enough about her, because she was solid during those PKs.
Yeah.
And the two penalties she saved were not like easy ones. She actually had to put in the effort. But once again, when it comes down to PKs, I think it's always about, can you stay calm? If not, it goes the way it went. I think Ghana did show us a lot of, at times they were vulnerable. I think if Ghana plays a team that has a little bit more firepower up top, they're going to have some rude awakenings.
Right.
But someone like Princess Marfor, who plays for BFC, Yeboa, all had good games. And I think that's very important. Like, when your wingers and your midfielders go into the semis with some type of a swagger, like, you know, they're feeling themselves. You can tell, like, you're in the tournament. I think that's going to be a very interesting matchup, obviously, in the semis as they go up against Morocco, because it's going to be a game where Morocco is going to win the midfield battle, because you have the players who are going to retain the ball a bit better. But it's all going to come down to the wingers. I think that's where the game is going to be won or lost. Whose team's wingers are going to dominate the game? And both teams rely heavily on their wingers dominating those 1v1 situations. Yeah. And both teams, funny enough, use the same tactic of having a number 10 who can arrive into space and create overload. So, for instance, Morocco obviously has Hislaine Chebec to do those, like, coming into space. And then I think Ghana in this game used Stella Nyamaki who plays for Gotham, to kind of similarly, and previously they had a Cheney doing that, but now she was up top in that, partnering with I'm skipping out on her name, but the striker, she just won best striker of the Ghanaian team as well.
Bodau.
Doris. So they went for those two up top, but I feel like they might switch back to like one up top. With a 4-4-1-1, basically. I mean, that's how I would go into that Morocco game. Don't play a 4-3-3 against Morocco. They're going to exploit your midfield. Don't play a 4-2-3-1. They're also going to exploit your midfield. I think you need to crowd the midfield and force Morocco into those 1v1s on the wings. As good as their wingers are, I think that would allow for a lot of energy to be exhorted on the wings. Anyways, we can go into predictions and whatnot, but I'm just very excited about the Morocco-Ghana matchup, because it's like, I can see what both coaches want to do. And it can be really one of those games where Ghana really gets smacked.
Right.
Yeah. There are moments where I was like, ooh, if Algeria had a striker that was a bit faster, y'all would have been in so much problems.
I mean, that just comes with it, man. When you play so open, I think the one thing that I appreciate about them is that they don't play, the Ghanaians don't play with any fear. So,
no.
But like you said, I mean, especially in these matchups, we just saw a team like Zambia, you know, get punished. And I don't even think like Zambia really like wasn't even like defensively, like I wouldn't even say that they were like really all over the place. I think that the Nigerians really just kind of took advantage of the moments. And I think if you kind of leave yourself as vulnerable as the Ghanaians did sometimes, this semifinal matchup could be tough, but definitely I felt as if it's hard to say. You know, who was the better team, right? Better team. The better team qualified, made it through to the next round. But it was a toss-up, man. But, like, Algeria, just like all the other teams, man, great run. Definitely a great foundation to continue building off of.
Absolutely. I mean, like,
if you don't concede, you know, that many goals, for you to go through the whole tournament without conceding a goal, you know,
it's mental.
It says something. And like, you know, it's not always about, you know, who looks the best. It's just about who can get the job done. And they know that they can do that. So last matchup, man, South Africa versus Senegal, man. I called this as my upset. I said Senegal was going to get the upset. We made it all the way to the penalty shootout, but South Africa, we talked about how South Africa was one of three favorites that you and I both had with Morocco and Nigeria as well, too. But sometimes it's like we just said, it's not about, how you get it done. It's just about, you know, can you get it done? And they did. They got the job done in the penalties and were able to make it through. So what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel for Senegal. First half, completely their half.
Right.
I feel like the way Senegal handled South Africa in the first half was like textbook. We studied y'all and we decided this is how we're going to play you. So the first thing that was so telling was that South Africa did not really have an answer for Ndiaye and Diop up top. And the amount of times I was in awe of, like, whenever there would be like a long ball to one of those two, the control, the touch, I was like, yo, this is clean. It was one of the games I was watching with my niece, Amina, and we were both there like, oh, did you see that touch? It was like chest. One time, bring it on your knee. One time, bring it down with like inside, outside of your foot. And that first half, I felt like Senegal did not reward themselves. And you know what it is? It's like Senegal did not have the speed on the wings to go by the defenders. And I think that was the one issue they had, because build up, they did their thing. Creating chances, not clear cut, but like, you know, moments you're like, ooh.
Right.
Like just this like one pass, the next pass would have been a potential goal. But I think whenever the ball went to the wings and it was a 1v1 on that wing, the wingers for Senegal just were like, so I'm going to turn and pass the ball back because I don't feel like I have the capacity.
Yeah.
We say we don't have the capacity.
Yeah.
We really just feel like that. And I really felt for them because I was like, give them just one good fast winger,
yeah,
and that would have been blow by, cross, because the height difference in this game was also very telling. Like the Senegalese women looked like giants. It was so funny, bro. I was like, yo, y'all are short.
Yeah.
But anyway, I feel like Senegal first half completely dominated. And I feel like South Africa needs, this is the most shakiest I've seen them play in a long time. I just feel like Senegal outmatched them in everything. They matched their energy tactically. They knew what South Africa was going to do. Obviously, South Africa was banking on the balls in behind the back, but Senegal was like, bet, we're going to push our line up. So whatever you try, you're either going to be offside or our goalkeeper is sweeping the ball. Right. And given the fact that Senegalese goalkeeper actually used to be a striker, so she was fast to get anywhere she needed to be. So I think Senegal, honestly, it's the second time they reach this stage and they lose based on PKs. So I really feel for them. But I think if I was the coach and if I was this team, I would feel really bad. Like, I would actually feel like, you know, sometimes you lose and you're just like in pain. Sometimes you lose, you're like, I bet. Mali, for instance, they go home. They're like, hey, we did all we could.
Right.
Morocco was better. Senegal is going to go home thinking like, bro, we really could have won this game.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more painful for a player than that feeling of thinking and knowing you could have won the game.
Yeah, especially like when you're going up against a team that's on paper, so supposedly better than you guys.
It should be the favorite.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, man.
Especially
to go, I'm just now looking at rewatching some of the penalties here, and it's just like, I mean, I don't know, man. It's a tough way because it's not like I don't know. I can't even say it's not an accurate like description of, you know, how the game went, because the penalty shootout is a part of how the game went. So, you know, if hindsight 20-20, but I guess if you would have finished your chances, you know, in the 90 minutes,
that first half,
we wouldn't have been here. But well, now we're here to the semifinals, bro. I mean, I don't know, man. That's Nigeria versus South Africa, Morocco versus Ghana. Let's start let's start with Nigeria versus South Africa, man.
Hey, I'm a piano taking on Afrobeats, bro.
Yeah.
I love this game. There are like, so there are a few rivalries in the women's game. You have Morocco, Zambia, Zambia, Nigeria. Nigeria, Ghana, for all the reasons we know.
Yeah.
Algeria, Morocco is another one I was praying would happen, because that would have been total chaos. But South Africa, Nigeria is like a classic in the women's game. It's like a classic in every sense of the word, because these are teams historically who dominated the women's game. Even though Nigeria always won tournaments and stuff, but these two teams are just fierce rivals. They, and I feel like that energy, and it honestly plays in favor of Nigeria, because they're basically playing another team like Zambia, who they feel like, in a way, you disrespected us. In a way, you actually disrespected us. Like, you know, last WAFCON, we finished fourth. You won it. We're coming back for our crown. We're on a mission. So I feel like I'm worried for South Africa because of what I saw in the game against Senegal. Because Nigeria actually has a similar profile as Senegal has. Defensively solid, can play a high line, can play a low line. Midfield was on lock. But then also Nigeria has attackers and wingers that are fast and will actually punish some of the things I saw during the Senegal-South Africa game that Senegal could not capitalize on. So I'm completely going for Nigeria in this game. I think I saw the look on South Africa's coach Desiree Ellis' face during the Senegal first half. And I'm like, that's not the face of a coach who's happy or chilling at this moment. She was worried. She was biting her nails. Like every time the camera cut to her face, she was pressed. And I think Nigeria just had one of those games, I believe, where you finally shown everyone who you are, and there's no way back. If you play bad in the next game, you're going to be the memes. Yeah. The memes that are going to come out of that.
Cooked.
So there's no way back. So for me, it's a clear Nigeria. The pressure's on Nigeria.
I agree. Especially, I mean, like, you know, with the whole the Mission X trying to get the 10th one, you know, and I mean, like you said, bro, I mean, yes, Morocco is, you know, at home. They're on, you know, home soil. But I don't know, bro. I feel like this Nigerian team is the one team where I feel like, you know, they're and rightfully so. I like you said, like, you know, they feel as if they've been disrespected. As far as, you know, all these other emerging teams. And so I don't get it twisted. Like, we're still here.
We're still here
to get the job done. So predictions on this game, what do you think? I hate to just go and take the easy way out, but I'm going to side with Nigeria, man. I don't know, bro. I feel like that win versus Zambia really just kind of showed me that, like, There are gears to them that, like, we haven't seen yet. And I'm not by any means saying that they're going to go out and beat them 5-0. But I just – in the group stage, we've seen that defensively they can stay sound. They won't concede goals. And then last game they showed that, okay, there's a lot of chatter about us not scoring. Here's five.
Yep. So. I'm going to go – 3-0, 3-1, something like that for Nigeria. I believe South Africa obviously has speed up top, but they also have a better midfield than Zambia. Njane is an incredible player in that midfield for South Africa. Like, even during the Senegal game, she was so secure sitting in front of that back four and just getting the ball. She can play with both feet. She can, you know, just someone that I'm like, if Zambia had someone like that, they would be cooking. But then I think they're gonna have to get their rotations right. I know there are a few players. There were a player or two injured in the South African squad, who potentially we might see back in the rotation. But I think someone like Malepe did not have a good game against against Senegal. I'm not sure what the health status is of Hilda Magaya, who honestly, it's a great player, but it feels like she's dealing with a one too many injury. And then something that was very interesting to see during the Senegal game was that South Africa actually in that first half played with a sweeper, something we usually don't see again in the modern game. But it felt like because they were afraid of this, the ability of Senegal to get in behind, because as much as they don't have speed on the wing, their two strikers are, like, actually fast. If a ball goes through there, it's like they will not beat you on the dribble and run past you.
Yeah, they'll be.
But if a ball goes over a defense and you need to that 1v1 foot race,
yeah,
they'll get you.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting. So I'm curious what the tactical approach is going to be for. for South Africa, I honestly don't feel like South Africa has the players to keep Nigeria from scoring, but I do know that Nigeria has the players to keep South Africa from scoring.
Yeah,
that's the and thing. I think that for me is what decides the game, because I'm not also I'm not sure if Linda Motlalo is completely healthy, because she got stepped on a few times during the Senegal game and she was limping a bit towards the end of that game, and she also got subbed off somewhere in the extra time. So
she's out. Holy cow.
That would be a problem. I don't know who's healthy for South Africa, but I do know that Nigeria has two squads basically that they could put out in terms of players and still damn near have the same quality.
That's the thing, man. It's the depth. And it's like, even if this game needs to go beyond 90 minutes,
they can go to the bench.
Yeah, they can go to the bench, and I think that that's going to be the difference in the matchup if it gets to that point. But yeah, so sounds like we're both going with Nigeria to beat South Africa. Next matchup is going to be Morocco versus Ghana. Well, Tuesday night in Morocco. I mean, it's really hard to go against Morocco at this point. When you look at their run to, I mean, their side of the bracket is considerably more manageable than the other bracket is too. So, and shout out to all my Ghanaians, man. I got love for Ghana, but I don't see how Morocco or how Ghana is going to stop Morocco from getting through. I think that they're already kind of at a disadvantage because on paper the Moroccans have a better team, better players on paper. But when you factor in everything else, the home crowd and just the momentum, bro. Like I just don't see how they're gonna get slowed down.
Yeah, Olympic Stadium, Rabat, it's gonna be sold out. You can expect fireworks and all of the smoke. Yeah. To be there, like literally, the smoke is gonna be being blazed in the air. I think the Moroccan fans are gonna make it hostile. So if you're a Ghanaian player, literally be ready to enter into a battle zone, because it is gonna be a battle zone. Because Morocco's dream is to win WAFCON, and they're gonna pull all the stops. If Ghana gets a penalty or something, expect lasers to be pointed on players' faces.
Yeah.
All of those tricks are going to come out. And I believe I know Ghana has the right tools to cause Morocco a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think this Moroccan squad, actually, I think if you can match them physically and play in a low enough block, you can frustrate them. But if you go out there and you say, we're going to go pound for pound.
Yeah, toe to toe.
Be ready, because it's going to be a long night. And I think, for instance, Zambia was able to get ahead, but we saw what happened. Banda and Kunananji went crazy, and even then Morocco came back and equalized it. And I don't think Hislam Shabak is having two bad games in a row. My head is like Morocco, but I believe if I look at the way potentially Morocco can set up and the way Ghana would potentially set up, I think it's going to be a good game in terms of there's a lot of tactical flexibility that both teams could show. I expect Morocco to win, but I would not be surprised if Ghana is able to steal this game. which would be an amazing upset.
Yeah.
So I'm going, I don't know. My head is saying Morocco, my heart is saying, but there's just a lot of details that I've seen in this Ghanaian team that I'm like, if y'all could just play a low block against this Morocco, frustrate them for like 40 minutes, just frustrate them for 40 minutes. You get in their heads and then you switch it up. Like, if I was a coach, I would not even put my most dangerous wingers. I would not start with them. I'd literally just be like, who are my most defensive, task-oriented wingers? You start and you frustrate the Moroccan wingers. You frustrate someone like Chebec. You frustrate someone like Tahnout. You frustrate someone like Diki. But then the issue for me is going to be Morocco is getting deservedly a lot of penalties in this tournament, but they're not like gimmick penalties. It's not like, you know, your 2002 World Cup South Korea getting penalties because referees just be saying, these are actually legit penalties. These are legit penalties.
Yeah.
And I know the Ghanaian backline loves a tackle. And I'm like, what you don't want to do is be in a 1v1 situation with Tahnout, Diki, or even Sena Messaoudi, who is one of the best players on the continent, if not the best African player who's still playing on the continent. Yeah. You don't want those players around the box and you're stretching your leg.
Yeah,
that's going to happen.
Yeah, you're right. They do love a tackle, boy. They do love a tackle. Shout out my Ghanaians, man.
I'm like, hey, please, no tackles.
Yeah.
If someone runs past you, see if you can catch up. If you can't, don't stretch a leg. Yeah, don't try a last minute sliding.
Stay on your feet.
Because you're going to hit one of those players' legs, and then we're going to be in a situation. Because, this actually brings something up. I do feel Ghana should have gotten a red card in the game against Algeria. There was a moment where Princess Marfo actually goes in with her elbow.
Oh, yeah.
On, like, what's her name? Algeria's number 7. Belkatir. Let me look that real, because I don't want to mess up her name like that. How do you say that actually?
Can't find it for Algeria.
Number 7.
Oh yeah, she got
she
was the one that got hurt. She left.
Yeah. It was in that sequence. She got that elbow. Morgan Belkatir. She plays. Yeah, also one of those players that played for, I believe, France or at some point for the French team when she was eligible to play for France, but ended up just playing for Algeria. Because I believe she was born in France as well, like most of those players.
She got clocked, bro. She got
hit. And that was a moment where I was like, yeah, that's a red card in my book. And even on her IG, she was like, basically, like, how is this not a red card, bro?
Yeah.
And she had to got like stitches and all that. Anyways, all of that to say, Ghana, don't play like this when you play Morocco. Because things like all of those situations are going to get punished.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. I agree 100%. I think that they have a tough task ahead of them. But like you said, man, with Chebec and Girardi, I don't see how Moroccans are going to be slowed down. So I got Moroccans. Even though I would love to see a Ghana versus Nigeria.
Ghana-Nigeria fight.
You know what I'm saying? At that point, bro, it's like form, all of that shit has gone out the window, bro. This is oh man, but Nah, man, I think that wraps up the semifinal, man. I mean, two great matchups. Obviously, we have the teams that we think should, go through with no problems, but this is football, man. This is football. This tournament has been full of surprises. So, I mean, who knows, man? Do you have any before we close out, I usually ask the guys, do you have any shout-outs?
Honestly, I would say shout out to everyone who's been, just discussing AFCON in all the different spaces they are. I was watching clips from, what's his name? He's a doctor, but it's like a big Arsenal fan, the Nigerian dude.
Oh. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
his name though.
Yeah, like yeah. So he was, for instance, he went to the game with Zambia. He was vlogging. He was in the stands. But these are people that have like 500,000 followers,
right?
Bringing attention to the tournament and all of that. Because I believe, I think it's like. He calls himself like.
I see him in my head, bro. I can't. I
follow. Yeah, he's like a huge, like
Arsenal. He's like, yeah, he's like always. He's like there, bro.
He's
like,
at every Arsenal game. Yeah, every Arsenal game. Kelechi.
Kelechi.
Yeah. Kelechi FC.
Yeah, bro.
But yeah, he's just like, yeah. But it's seeing people like that just do their thing is amazing. And then watching them go to a game like this in a tournament. So shout out those people who – and also I'm forgetting the Athletic podcast and Tamara Griffin, mm-hmm. who hosted also on her pod. Episode hosted Uchen Nakanu to discuss like the AFCON. It's just great that obviously there's a lot happening and there are a lot of tournaments happening. And I know the Euros, the women Euros are obviously the most mediatized and has the most money and all of that and the most clout. But I'm just happy that even spaces for like, the Athletic are opening up an entire episode just on the AFCON. I hope they do the same thing for like the women's Copa America, where there's been also all sorts of dramas because the dressing rooms and the warm-up zones are all just a mess. And the Brazilian players have all like been like, yo, bro, this is not the standard. Like we watch the Euros and we see the women there getting their respect. We come here and we're not even respected. What is this for like dressing rooms? So I just enjoy what I've been seeing that's been like, because I still fully believe that there's so much space for the women's tournament in Africa to grow. Obviously, when Morocco is not playing, there are not a lot of full stadiums because, people don't have the financial means to go watch games or leave your work, leave your job to go watch a game. Commitment. It's not like Europe is structured around, summer is like vacations and no schools. People take their families to go do stuff. That's not the way African economies set up for most part. People don't just take summer vacations.
Yeah.
shout out to all these people who, are bringing. So Tamara Griffin, shout out to you for bringing the AFCON into the Athletic and that space. And Kelechi FC also for going to these games and just highlighting what's going on. I think it's important that people are doing this. And also, shout out WNSL Reddit and Women's Soccer Reddit, they've been holding it up. Whenever like someone posts about the WAFCON, they've all been trying. Everyone's basically watching games. Everyone is discussing. And you feel like what we were discussing in the previous conversation, WNSL fans are really invested in the players they have. Even if they go to their home teams and they're playing at home, they're still there. They're watching the games. And so shout out WNSL fans for, you know, bigging up the WAFCON as well and all the spaces they are.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. Well said. Well said, definitely. Shout out to Tamara Griffin, Kelechi, obviously, and everyone that's trying to bring more light to the game. Obviously, you know, the players do a great job of that by just their talent alone. Obviously, like the global superstars that we talk about. But no, man, I think even, you know, if even if you followed the women's game or not, I think if you were to watch this tournament, it's straight away you can see that there's a lot of talent in this tournament. There's a lot of talent on these teams that you may not have watched before. So it's a great opportunity as a fan and also someone who, you know, follows the game or maybe even is doing a little bit of scouting. There's a lot of talent here and a lot of just untapped potential. So, no, I agree. Your shout out was very deep, and I appreciated that. Mine not so much. I just wanted to shout out Esther Okoronkwo for her goal and two assists. You talk about making an impact when you know what I'm saying, when you're called upon. So shout out to her. I would love to see more of her for the rest of the tournament and just in the future. Who knows? But now, Muhammad, another great episode, bro. Semifinals down, well, quarterfinals down. You know, we're approaching the semifinals. Game start on Tuesday, and then the finals this weekend. So we'll be back before then to kind of recap how the semifinals went, and then to preview
finals.
Yeah, whoever earns their
spot. Nigeria, Morocco. That's what I'm thinking it's gonna be.
Who knows, man? It could be Nigeria, Ghana, the Jollof Wars, man. We'll see.
The Jollof Wars would be amazing.
Oh man. Nah, but everyone, we appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thank you guys for your continued support. Muhammad, thank you again for giving me your time, man.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of fun. Absolutely, man. Good luck to everybody in your future endeavors. Thank you.